Welcome to all our furry and not so furry listeners to What the Bark, the Right Paw podcast. We're really excited today. We've got a new type of podcast that we're delving into today, and it's a breed spotlight. It's all about breeds and all about one breed in particular. And we've got a breeder on board who's going to really shed some light on a fantastic working breed. But before we get into that, George, welcome again. I think this is episode 10 of the podcast. We've done 10.
And Nathan, and look, it's almost getting towards the end of the year. You know, I can still remember the first one. I think we couldn't put, three words together. But now, literally, we go on for hours and hours. And I agree, today we have a breed today that I am so looking forward to. You know why? Because I can't pronounce any of the breed types.
There's too many.
There's too many. And I'm hoping that our guests will at least help me with that. So let's welcome her.
Absolutely. So we're really excited to welcome Jody from Belletta Kennels, Belletta Belgian Shepherds. Welcome, Jody.
Hi, how are you going? Thanks for having me.
Hey, Jody. Good to see and hear you, although viewers can't see you, but I've known Jody for years here, Nathan.
Yeah, you both go way back.
Yes, we do go way back. We sort of began discussions and talking, what was it, about 3 or 4 years ago? Jody?
Oh, crikey, longer, I think.
Oh, longer. God, you see, yeah, that's what I mean. So we won't give away too many of our age here, Jody. We'll just keep it. So yeah, glad to have you back. And the first question I'm going to ask, because it's going to make the whole podcast easy, can you please pronounce and go through all these varieties of the Belgian Shepherd, please?
I can. Okay, so the first one we have is the Groenendaal. So that's the black long coat. So they're obviously black. They only come in black, and they only come with a long coat. Mm. So then we have the Tavirin, which is the long coat as well, and they're red or grey. So, again, either red or grey. And long coat only. Then the Malinois, which is the short coat fawn with a black mask. Mm.
And that would be the one that most people probably are familiar with.
It is. And they're the ones the RAF use and the police use. Mm. So, yeah, people tend to see them. I think there was one in Person of Interest. There was one in there was the movie Max, I think it was called, with the Malinois, and people see those highly trained dogs and think, wow, I need that dog. Mm. Yeah, and then of course we've got the rarest of the four variety, which is the Lacanois.
Oh, Lacanois, that's the one.
Oh, they're my favourite. Oh, they're my favourite. I just love them. That's the clown of the variety. So they're the curly coat or the tousled or rough coat, and they're again fawn. With a mask.
So a question my son wanted me to ask you straight off the bat is, now, please tell me, the Belgian Shepherd, it is derived from Belgium, isn't it?
Yes,
oh,
absolutely.
Good. Thank you, because I thought it's not going to be one of those Australian Shepherds where everyone thinks they're from Australian, and then I'll say, God, you've cleared that up for me. If the answer was no to that, I was literally going to cancel the whole podcast. Yeah. So we've got...
I don't know what to believe anymore.
What to believe. The Groenendaal, the Malinois... Yes. The
Tavirin.
And what's the other one, Mr.? The Lacanois. And the most popular is which one?
Oh, crikey. At the moment, the most popular is, well, hang on, we'll go back to who's the most bred. The ones that are bred the most in Australia is the Malinois.
Okay.
And that's because, and we've had this massive surge recently of working line breeders. Mm. And so every man and his dog has decided to become a Malinois breeder. Yep. And they're breeding working line Malinois, which cause a great deal of stress for us in the rescue. But, yeah, so that's the one that's bred the most. But I think out of the four variety, the most popular family pet is the Groenendaal or the Tavirin.
That's what I thought, the Groenendaal. And usually the Malinois is... popular because from my reading, because you know when I get to these podcasts, Jody, I do weeks and weeks of research to make sure I'm knowledgeable and understand pretty much they're more easily trained. Am I right? When it comes to trainability, the Malinois seems to be the one that you can sort of train better. Am I right?
No, Not really, no. Look, all of them you can
do. The weeks of research.
Research, Jodie, you could have at least been more subtle. You just sledgehammered the whole thing. You could have said, oh, George, you know, we're doing Q&A here, and you could at least be a bit more subtle and say, yeah, George, you're right on the right track. But well, anyway,
yeah, you are sort of on the right track. The Malinois is, look, all four variety are so smart. And I tell people, my puppy people that come to me and say, oh, I want to get a dog. I always say to them, you need to be ready for this dog because they're smarter than most people I know. And I have been told that could be an indication of the people I know.
Keep the jokes. I'll keep the humor going. You try and be serious, Sam.
Okay. No, so, yeah, look, they're super smart. They're super trainable. They're not a dog for everybody because of their intelligence level. You know, my daughter lived in a unit in Vaucluse in Sydney, and she had two Belgians living with her. And she was getting a unit, was having an inspection, and she didn't want people to be eaten. So she let them go to her friend's place in a 14th floor of a high-rise unit complex. Now, these two dogs worked out how to open the front door of the unit and make their way out. So they'd never been there before, but they figured out how to open the door and get out. So, you know, they're so smart that it's quite scary.
And that's surely why they... You know, you'd see them in the police force, like alongside the German shepherds, which I'm sure we'll get into in a minute. But yeah, it's that they're fit for purpose.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And the military and the police force
use them.
Yeah, they use them in a lot of respects. Like the German shepherds are also incredibly smart, but they are moving more towards the Malinois and the Belgians because they're smaller, so they're more agile. Mm. And they also have less health issues. Mm. So whereas we tend not to have hip dysplasia in our breed and things like that, whereas it can be quite rampant in German shepherds, but we test for hip dysplasia, so we don't get it.
Yeah, so Nathan hit on something I see, that they use customs, police, army. They tend to be at a standard that they select. Why is it? Why do they pick them ahead of the? Is it because they're more flexible and just? Is it temperament wise? Is it because the train that there's a different prey drive to them? You know, why is it?
Absolutely, yeah. There is a very high prey drive, especially in the working lines. They've been bred more for that prey drive and for that intensity. So the Malinois these days tends, especially the working line ones, tend to have that super high drive, that super intensity, that they're not a family pet. The working, as a general rule, the working line Malinois is not a family pet.
Not a family
pet. They need to work. They have that constant need to be on the go and doing a job. Hmm. So if you don't give them a job, you can get in all sorts of strife.
Sorry, Nathan, I'm just going to pop. I don't want to interrupt. But another question I've got is, which one is the quickest of the four, speed-wise?
It depends. Look, from my experience, I've got all four variety here.
Yep.
From my experience, it's the Malinois.
The Malinois.
Yeah.
Because it depends what they're chasing.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. You put a cat out there, and I'll tell you what, the Lacanois that overtake the Malinois.
Well... I'll be honest with you, Jodie, you've confirmed my research because that's what my research tells me. The Malinois, which has been clocked at around about, from what I read, about 55K. So they're the ones that I've seen that run through all the, you know, they do some of those working trials and they're super quick and they can leap, can't they too? They can leap.
Yes, they can, and so can the Lacanois. They tend to be... more agile, which is really interesting because technically they're all the same breed. They're the same dog or different coat, colour and texture.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, it's the main differences between the four are the coat and the colour. Is that's right?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Coat, colour and texture. Yep. Mm. That's the only difference according to the breed standard.
Yep. So it's interesting because I've always had this question whether coat type and colour changes temperament. And in this breed, you're telling me you've got four different types and each type is different and all that varies in them when it comes to the standard is their coat colour and type. Am I right?
Exactly. Yeah, okay. You are. But a lot of that, I think, is because of breed selection.
Mm.
So what we've done as breeders over the years is with the Gronendal and the Tavirin, we've gone, these are family pets. So we've bred them towards that. We've chosen breeding dogs for their temperament and their, their suitability towards a family pet. Whereas the Malinois has been bred predominantly as a working dog. So for military RAF, all that sort of stuff. And then the Lacanois, well, of course, that's the rarest of all. And there's less than 1,500 of them in the world. In Australia. Yeah, I know. They're rarer than a panda bear. That's our promo thing for them at the moment.
It's incredible.
Because there's only three breeders in Australia of Lacanois. And as at my last count, and I should have done it before, in the last couple of days, but in the last 28 years, there's been less than 250 born in Australia.
Gosh. Wow.
So there you go. And I think in Australia at the moment, we've probably got less than 30 registered in Australia.
I mean, it's really interesting. I'd love to sort of go back in time a bit and understand, like, what are the origins of the Belgian Shepherd and then how did those four sort of, I guess, branch off?
Okay, well, the origins were back in Belgium way back in the day, like 130, 140 years ago, the sheep herders all had these amazing dogs that they were using as working dogs, and they went, these dogs all look pretty similar and they're really good working dogs. So they decided to create a breed standard because they had these dogs. So they set up this breed standard. So they're actually sheep herding dogs. Yep. So that's what they were bred for originally.
Yep.
Was to be sheep herding. And there's a difference between the Belgian Shepherd and, say, the Border Collie or the Kelpie because the Belgian Shepherd was not bred to move sheep. It was bred to keep them in one place. Mm. So they do what we call border work. So they will keep around the herd to keep the sheep in place and protect them and guard them. And I read a book years ago, and I wish I could find the article again, but it was a story about this old farmer that had six Belgian shepherds, and he put them out with his flock, and they'd just sit there and watch the sheep. And when the wolves attacked, two would go out at once and fight them off. And then when those two got tired, another two would go out, and those two would retire. So that's a testament to their intelligence, is they could work as a team. And if you have a group of them like I do and you watch them when they're locked onto something, they do work as a team.
Jodie, are they a vocal? Do they bark? Like some herding breeds will be vocal.
They do like the
You're nodding your head. Voice. Oh, okay. Yes.
They do like the sound of their own voice.
They do.
Yes, they do. I've got one girl.
Be nice
here,
to your neighbours. Basically.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah, Sugar, she just loves to chatter.
Whoa, stop. Sugar is the name of one of your...
Of your Belgians.
Yes.
And don't tell me you've got Spice.
No, I don't have Spice, no, I don't. But Etta is, she's probably the most vocal of all, and she's my oldest. And, she will howl. She'll get up and go, I want to go to bed now. So she'll whinge and whinge and whinge. So you let her in the bedroom and then she goes to bed and she gets on the bed and she'll lay there and howl because she wants you to go to bed with her.
Okay.
So, she's very vocal. Mm. Very vocal.
And do they sort of get on with other pets?
Of course, absolutely. Okay. Any dog will if it's raised correctly and it's raised with the other pet. Like, I mean, I have cats. Some of them, my Lacanois, for instance, come hell or high water, they will eat the cat in a heartbeat. And that's just prey drive, 100% prey drive. It's very strong in them. But the Gronnies and the Tavirins and that, they live with the cats happily.
Yeah.
And the Malinois too, she's pretty good with the cat.
And, as we're talking, we can see one of your dogs jumping on.
Yeah, that's a Gronendal, I would hazard a guess.
I think it's giving me a hint. Had enough.
It's on the bed.
And so 150 years ago, these sheep herders, so they created the breed standard, and did they already have the four different types, and they set those out from the outset?
Well, they did. It was really weird because they had the four dogs that were technically and looked pretty much the same, and then as they, like, one was from the town of Lacken, and there is a town Gronendal, and then Tavirin and Malamar. So the four towns is where the dogs.
I had no idea that they were towns.
They are, yeah. I know, it's fascinating. One day I'll get over there. But yeah, the four areas are where these dogs were basically honed, and that's when they separated and they started becoming the four different varieties. Mm. So yeah, it was really interesting when you go back.
And it would be remiss of me not to ask, because one of our team in the Right Paw team is obsessed with German Shepherds, and I'm fascinated to know, is there any connection between the Belgian Shepherd and the German Shepherd, or is that just a, you know, common misconception?
If I can just interrupt here, sorry, I just want to mention here, sorry, Nathan, the front cover of this month's Dog News Australia has a beautiful German Shepherd on the front. It's just a small plug to Dog News Australia out there. Jody just thought, if you've got this month's edition, there's a beautiful German Shepherd, Superior Champion Allendale Quicksilver. It's just graces the front part cover of the of Dog News Australia. But sorry, yes, just thought a shout out to German Shepherd. Maybe we need a German Shepherd lover on the podcast soon. Yeah, this could be absolutely a reach out.
But yeah, so a misconception, you're saying, Jody?
Yeah, misconception. Yeah, they're not related at all.
Not
back in the Belgian Shepherd. Like, obviously, here we go, crossbreeds. Belgian Shepherd originally is a crossbreed. So back in the day, they I'm going to get shot for that one.
Oh no!
But yeah, I know, isn't it? But most breeds are in Australia. They all
they like to start from somewhere.
Nathan, we might have to edit that from the whole episode. That line, can you just repeat that, Miss Hafey? What was it? What was that? Something about sorry, we lost. You broke up. All are crossbreeds. No, we got heritage. We got pedigrees. No.
Let's not go down that road.
No, and it's down the rabbit hole. But that's amazing. So not related, and the German Shepherd is its own thing, and obviously, yeah, it was descended from, you know, I guess its own sort of, yeah, like breeds, I guess.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, back in the Belgian Shepherd, we often, with the Lacamoire, let's look at the Lacamoire. So we've got different types of Lacamoire. So we get what we call the Bouvier type, which has got a bigger coat, more facial furnishings, and it's really interesting when you see them because they just look like these little teddy bears with all this curly stuff.
Again, stop here. I'm going to stop. You're telling me there's a type within the varieties?
Yeah, there is.
Nathan, yeah. What? So you've got four varieties and you've got different types within the variety?
You do. Yeah, overall, the Belgian has that.
I thought I finally understood the breed, and now you're telling me that there's a type within, there's a variety within the type.
Mainly in the Lacamoire. Yeah, the others we all should be pretty close, although when you go to a specialty show you can see the different types, but you shouldn't be able to, I suppose. As a breed enthusiast, I think it's really sad that we have different types within the breed. They all should be the same type. But we do see different types.
But it does have a teddy bear sort of appearance. I'm looking at a photo of the Lacanois now, which I think, you'd be hard pressed to find one on the streets these days. You know, it's, as you said, so 30 odd in Australia.
I've got two here. One of my girls, Arwen, which George knows, he's met her a few times. You remember Arwen Lacanois? She's got her own Facebook page own Instagram page.
The cup of coffee I had with her, you know, when you brought her in. It was lovely. We chatted all day. We had a biscuit, shared biscuits. You made it sound like I was meeting some female you brought in. I do remember you. I think she weed on the floor, if I was correct.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, funny.
That's right. We won't talk about that because
we won't go there.
No.
But no, Arwen is she's just amazing. She's still Australia's leading Lacanois, and she's just the most amazing dog. Beautiful temperament. She lives
when
in
you
Melbourne.
Say Australia's leading, based on what?
Based on the show scene.
Okay,
the show
good.
Circuit.
Okay, yeah. Well done.
She's
okay.
The most. Yeah, she's Australia's leading Lacanois. She got a international excellent grading from a international judge, which was terrific. I was pretty happy that day.
Well done.
But,
amazing.
Yeah, she's a beautiful dog, and she lives in Melbourne with a lovely couple, and she's now a little lounge lizard, and she's retired. But no one's beaten her so far in her awards. Wow.
We need to get her on the front cover of Dog News Australia. That's
we
what we
do.
Need. We need to.
We've. I think George is getting excited because we have a very special guest, top secret guest from Dog News Australia, who'll be joining us on the podcast very soon. But no, it's interesting. So I have in front of me. Usually George has the books, but I have the Concise Australian Dog Judges Guide, which you know I pick up and read from time to time, to brush up on all the different breeds. And I'm looking at the breed standard for the Belgian Shepherds, and it looks like they have a general one. So I might even read from this because people might find it very interesting, our listeners. So the Belgian Shepherd dog is of medium proportions, harmoniously proportioned, combining elegance and power of medium size with dry, strong muscle fitting into a square, rustic frame, I imagine, used to the open air life and built to resist the frequent atmospheric variations of the Belgian climate. So they must, I guess, be able to cope with a variety of temperatures as well.
Mm. Absolutely.
Mm. Double-coated, I assume?
Yes, they are. And the interesting thing is they have a no-smell coat, so they don't get that doggy smell. You know how you get that doggy smell in your house?
Yeah.
Yep, Belgians don't get that. And the other interesting thing is that they only shed twice a year. So, like, I have currently, as at today, 9 Belgian Shepherds sleep in my house with me at night.
Oh, no.
And I can walk around my house and I haven't vacuumed for a couple of days and there is no dog hair.
Okay.
Wow, that's amazing.
And you shed twice a year. So that was almost read like something out of a Shakespeare novel. Read that, Nathan. Does it still go
on? There's a little bit more. I mean, it's interesting. The elegance comes up a lot as a word. So yes, through the harmony of its shape and its high head carriage, the Belgian Shepherd dog should give the impression of that elegant strength, which has become the heritage of the selected representatives of a working breed. And then it goes into all of the key points. So yeah, they're about, you know, half a meter tall, 60 centimeters tall, sort of, I guess. And yeah, square frame, alert, confident, attentive expression, which I guess goes back to why they're so heavily sought after in working lines and also for the police force as well. This is something I was going to ask actually, Jody. You might be able to help me here. So it says that the breed should have a scissor bite. So what is a scissor bite? I didn't realize there were different types of bites. I'm really curious about this myself.
There is different types of bites. Okay, so a scissor bite is where the top teeth sit slightly over the in front of the bottom teeth, and then the side teeth fit together like scissors. So if you can imagine, you know, like your pinking shears, you know, how they slot together. Like that. Well, that's a scissor bite. Yeah. So, and then, you know, you've got undershot and overshot and things like that, where your bites are, your teeth are either too far in front or too far behind and things like that. So, but in the Belgian, you can have a level bite and that's still acceptable.
Yeah. It says here a pincer bite is tolerated.
So, yep. Which is level.
There you go.
Well, I thought I might just throw in my little, It's competition time, Nathan.
Yes.
So what we do, Jody, is if anyone's listening to this podcast, they need to email me on the 15th of November. So they'll be listening on the 15th of November between 10:30. You're not jotting this down, Jody, because you can't win this prize. 15th of November. Between 10:30 and 10:35. And I want them to email me the 4 types of Belgian Shepherds, and they win a full breed profile voucher. For the first person to email between, what was it, 10:30 and 10:35 on the 15th.
In the morning, presumably.
In the morning, yes. And 15th, I don't know when the 15th of 11th is. If it's a Saturday, fine. If it's a Sunday, fine. I thought I'd just give us a bit more time to...
Marketing dose. It's a Monday, so bright and early Monday morning.
Excellent. Monday morning, 10:30 to 10:35, the first person to email me with the four different varieties of Belgian Shepherd will win a full breed profile gift voucher to the value of $195.
Wow. And then ask them to pronounce them.
Oh, they got to ring me. No, I've gone away from trying to call me. No.
That's mean.
So I've got a little thing. You've told us all about now. I know you make all your money and your millions off, you know, your beanie, but people don't understand you have a really nice little area, which is your rescue and rehoming part of you. And I think we should sort of dedicate some of this podcast to listening to just some of that, because it's great work what you do. I know we briefly talked about it when you came in and trying to rehome some of these. Maybe give us a bit of insight into this and how it starts and what you do and who's involved. And
okay, so many years back now, I was involved heavily with the clubs, the Belgian Shepherd clubs, and they run arms of rescues. But what I was seeing was, although they offer a rescue service as such, it was limited in what they could do. They were very limited in you know, because it was restrictive. And anyway, long story short, so a couple of friends of mine and I decided we just started doing it. We just started helping people with Belgian Shepherds. From there, it expanded to the Belgian Shepherd Rescue and Rehab Australia. So that's been running now for nearly 8 years. What we do is we help people rehome their dogs. So if somebody has a Belgian Shepherd and they go, for whatever reason, they can't keep the dog, they either email or ring us up, and then we take all their information. We will either advertise the dog and help them to find, and then we weed out the weirdos, and then we put them in touch with the owners, and then they do the final deal. If there's an instance, and there's been a lot over the years, where they can't keep the dog, we take the dog in, and then we help them find, you know, we'll put the dog up, we'll board it, we'll do whatever we have to do, we do rehab. I had one Lacanois that I was actually in Melbourne. I was living in Queensland and I was down in Melbourne for a work conference for a couple of days. And I got a call from a breeder saying, I need help. We need to get this dog out. It's in a really bad situation. She's actually advertised it on Gumtree to free to good homes. So I contacted her and said, you know, can I come and have a chat to you? I'm from the rescue. So I hired a car. This is a funny story. I hired a car. Drove out to 2.5 hours out to this woman's place, walked into this place, and oh my God, it was disgusting. It was just, honestly, there was this big round bale of hay. There was, in a house block, there was horses, there was dogs, there was goats, there was you name it. It was all in this tiny little house block. There was feces everywhere. There was rubbish everywhere. The dogs were all toileting in the hay that the horses were eating. It was just a disgusting mess. I convinced this woman to let me take the dog and that I'd find her a home. So I've got this dog. I've thrown her in the back seat of this hire car, and she was molting at the point at that time. So it was really quite funny. There was dog hair everywhere. This, you know, this woman had never bathed this dog, and she'd been rolling in all of this rubbish and garbage and crap. So I drove back, I'm on the phone ringing people, drove back to the airport, got her in the crate, got her on a flight, the same flight as me back, because I was going back that afternoon. Gold Coast Airport stayed open for me to get the dog off. The freight people stayed back. Oh, I know, it was amazing. They were just incredible people. So many people helped me that day. So we got the dog off. I got her out the crate. I got her into my car. We got her home, and I put her in, because I had some kennels up there. I put her in a kennel and then couldn't touch her for 3 weeks. She just shut down. Anyone who went near her, she was going to kill them. And anyway, so we did a lot of work. And I worked with an amazing trainer in Queensland called Justin Palazzo Orr. He was the pet coach. He now runs PTSD dog program. Happy Hearts, I think.
Okay.
Happy Hearts. Yeah. Anyway, he runs that RSPCA. But he came and worked with her and we did work. 12 months it took us to rehabilitate that dog.
So what do you think that was? Was it just because of that you took her away from these other animals or family?
Oh, she'd been abused.
You don't know what happened there. That's the thing, yeah.
She'd been abused. She'd been picked on by other dogs. There was dog fights. There was probably about 8 dogs in this house. It was just disgusting. Mm. And anyway, eventually we rehomed her.
It does take about 12 months to rewire them. You can, I mean, that's
sometimes,
what I've been talking about. Yeah.
Yep,
you know, when you get something that's coming, it does at a certain age. You better give yourself about 12 months to sort of get them rewired.
Yeah. Usually 3 months would be the minimum. And then, anywhere after that, depending on the level of damage done.
Yeah, how entrenched it would be.
So exactly, shout out to Gold Coast Airport. Ching Ching.
Oh, Gold Coast Airport were amazing.
And then you had this gentleman, what was his name again? We're going to have to try and search. Justin.
Yeah,
and he does training for the
RSPCA now.
He works, they've got a program where they take shelter dogs and they use them to work with people with mental health issues. So this dog ended up, after 12 months, we did finally rehome her, and then she travelled the world on a yacht. And she now lives
luxurious life.
Yeah, absolutely. So she now lives in Melbourne and with a beautiful family in Melbourne, and she just has the best life ever. But you know, that's just one thing. I mean, only just 2 weeks ago, we do so much behind the scenes that people don't know about.
Yeah.
And not every dog that we get ends up on our Facebook page. I'll probably get about 2 to 3 Malinois a week come to me through the rescue.
Wow.
And we don't see many Gronendals or Tavirans, but we do see some. And I think over the years I've had 2 Lacanois. Mm.
Jodie, you don't want to see any coming through because you prefer that anything that's as a pet stays. Why do you think they end up? Is it because, you know, where is the breakdown happening? Is it someone selling them this Belgium that doesn't suit their work? What is it? Where is it? Is it lifestyle?
It is because with the Malinois, it's because the breeders are just selling them. They're not interviewing the people correctly. They're not doing the research. They're not making sure that it's the right home for that dog. Mm. And that's the biggest problem we see. The working line Malinois, like I said before, is not generally a family pet.
Mm. Yeah, well, so that's why they need to get onto Rightpool, because they would screen them all beforehand.
Yeah. Well, that's what we, you know, we try and help with. Like at the end of the day, matching owners and dogs. I think that's where you make the most difference to the lifetime of the animal. You know, if you can get that matching right, and obviously the breeders make that call, you know, then that you're setting it up for the best possible life.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, 2 weeks ago I had an 11-week-old Malinois puppy that I had to rehome, the man. Lovely man. His family circumstances changed. He had a tragedy in his family. He couldn't keep the puppy. Now, this man paid $4,000 for this puppy with pedigree papers from a working line Malinois. And he contacted me because he didn't know what to do. Mm. So that puppy is now living with a veteran who came back from Iraq. For 14 years, he was a dog handler in the RAF. And now he now has I think they said there was something like 12 people in his unit, and there was only 2 still alive. All the others had committed suicide because of what they faced over there. And now I think we saved that man's life, because he now has a puppy that he's just head over heels.
Devote his life to.
Well,
as
well done. So, exactly. Jodie, just for all the listeners, what is your Facebook page is?
Belgian Shepherd Rescue and Rehab Australia.
Absolutely. And we'll include a link to that in the show notes so that everyone can find it.
Cool.
Nice. And I know you've come in here and I've given you bottles of shampoo and some wipes and everything to try and help out. But, you know, if you need anything, shout out. I'm always happy to help any organisation such as yours. And currently, how many in your group? Is it just you managing this? How many help you out with your rescue?
Oh, no, we've got, there's myself. Oh, there's about half a dozen of us.
Nice.
And then we've got others out, you know, who foster dogs for us. And then, you know, we'll run around and deliver dogs and pick them up and do all that sort of stuff for us. So we're really lucky. We have a lot of support.
Yeah, I think it's the thing, you know, the reason you don't see a lot of Belgians in shelters or in rescue is probably because of the work you're doing. So it's almost like, you know, you're stopping it at the source, and, you know, people don't see the good work you're doing because it's not ending up in the shelters.
Yeah,
exactly. And like I said, we don't put everything on the Facebook page either. So we tend to do a lot behind the scenes. You know, some people are so devastated about having to relinquish their dog that they can't face it being public. So we do a lot behind the scenes. And, you know, we help people if they have to euthanize their dog. We'll help them through that process as well. And, you know, so, yeah, we do a lot.
Nice work. So it's good that all those millions you make from your breeding, you're putting it back into those. You know, it's good, a good philanthropy, you know, philosophy there. You've got there, Jody. Funny. What?
I wish I made millions.
Look, I can just we don't want to describe the palace you're in here while we're talking, and Nathan and I are admiring just the chandeliers that are just drooping from there, and, you know, from all the no, really good. I love that.
I should turn the camera around so you can see Etta laying on the bed with 4 feet up in the air on her back. What?
Sleeping on her back.
Yeah.
There's something about
Belgians lay on their backs. They sleep on their backs.
It's been interesting. I definitely
I've learned a lot, and I was going to say, Jody, just, you know, final question from me is, you know, we obviously have a lot of listeners that are tuning in to learn about the Belgian. If, you know, if there's one thing that you want our listeners to take away from this, that, you know, that you can teach them about the Belgian, what's the, you know, the one thing that you'd love to, you know, impart on our listeners about the Belgian?
A Belgian Shepherd is not for everybody. So Belgian Shepherds, they love their family, but they have their person. So if you're thinking about getting a Belgian Shepherd, think about the fact that you will never have a shower alone again. You will never go to the toilet alone again. You will never sleep alone again.
I hear you. It happens here. I get followed by two now, not one. You can't do anything alone. I have my family, but I have my Charlie and now lately Mary. They just, so it's, and I could imagine if it was a big dog like a Belgian, I've got two little things I almost trip over. Broke So I always like to ask the lead question, you know, extendable. What sort of lead? Harness, lead? How would you walk a Belgian?
Oh, never use a harness, especially on a young dog. I don't like them. I will not use them. I don't recommend
them. Tell me more.
They're terrible. Just a little bit about me and why I'm saying this. Behaviour modification is my thing, right? So I started, I had 8 years ago, another breeder put out the call. They needed help. They needed people to foster their dogs. So I took on this dog. I fostered her. She came with all manner of behavioural issues. And that started me down the road of learning about behaviour and behaviour modification. So this dog taught me so much, it was ridiculous. Anyway, harnesses are designed to teach your dog to pull. It's that simple. Think about it. You're putting this around their chest and around their body where they're going to put all their force into. When you put a dog in a sled or a horse in a harness or in a sulky or anything, you're putting a harness on them for them to pull you forward.
Okay.
So when you put a harness on a young puppy, their instinct is to pull into it, right? So you teach a dog to pull. Now, when I teach my puppies, I teach everything off lead first. So if I want to teach my dog to be a show dog, I will teach them all of the moves off lead, and then I'll put a collar on them so that it's not, the collar is there as a safety, not as a, you know, a teaching aid as such. But with the collars I use, I never use a flat collar. because flat collars can slip off over the head. I use what's called a martingale collar. So it's a flat collar with a chain on it that hangs loose. And then when fitted correctly, it's just firm enough. So if the dog does pull on it for any reason or the puppy gets a fright and pulls backwards, it can't slip off over the head. So it just sits firmly around their neck. So that's my recommendation as a martingale collar.
You're just throwing, you're going to make me look really strange. You now, I've got one on a harness and one on a collar. Maybe that's another discussion. Harnesses, I can see what you're saying, but I'm going to jump in here. But sometimes if you've got your dog that's already pulling, then a harness seems to me to be the most effective way to manage it, especially the ones that are, you don't like the horse ones that come across and they work effectively. You know, I can understand where you're coming from and how they work. Most animals that do have a harness have them on, so it helps them when they are pulling. But interesting. I've never thought about it that way, and maybe that's a discussion we can have when we get
in a whole other episode as well.
Yeah, when we get the sponsor of our who's going to do all our collars and leads coming up onto the podcast and talk about the benefits of one over the other.
Yeah,
well, so what was the one you recommended? It was a flat collar and it's got like a little chain.
What was it? Martingale?
Martingale collar. Martingale.
I'll Google that.
I think there's a company called Canine Pro in Sydney, and I think they sell them and they call them training collars. But you can get them with either a bit of chain or you can get them with cloth. So on the on the baby puppies, I tend to use the ones with the cloth. It's like a loop, so the two rings pull together.
So as it pulls more, it sort of pulls the collar in more. Is that how it happens? Is that how it
works? Yeah, that's right, yeah. But when it's fitted correctly, it should never choke the puppy or the dog. It should just be firm around their neck. So it should never choke them. So it's not like a choke chain or anything like that.
I'll look that up.
Yeah, and shout out to Canine Pro. They're a great company. And also Alison from Canine Pro is also a breeder, and she's on Rightpaw under Hertz and Labradors. So yeah, she's a fantastic breeder, and they do great work in behavior modification at Canine Pro. Yeah,
they do, yes, and they work a lot with Malinois and Belgians, so they're very good. Yeah,
I've never heard so much advertising on a podcast in my. This is becoming like, thank you to our sponsors. Jody, you know what? It's been good, Jody. You have been literally.
Font of knowledge.
Yeah, the way you're able to just talk about all the topics, and you've really been, and I don't think I've heard many ums and ahs during this conversation. I think I've done more ums and ahs than what our guests have had on. So really knowledgeable, enjoyed it. I think there's room to have you again on soon when we have our, when we're into our second series. Nathan,
absolutely.
Really, really, really nice. You know, I really like the work you do. You've always been a genuine person. You've always been lovely. You've always been nice. Had a cup of tea and coffee. You've always had, I know, the interest of your breed and the welfare of your dogs as number one. So, you know, well done. Glad you've decided and glad you reached out to us to come onto the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to have been here.
What we're going to do, we finish up with really educational part of the show where I get Nathan and I get our guests to pick a number between 1 to 180 odd. And then I grab my genetic book and I just go through that number and what disease you've landed on and educate people on a disease.
Yeah. We have a different disease every week. So you have to pick a number and we'll see what page you land on.
Oh, crikey. I was going to say my age, but you didn't give me 1,000. So,
okay.
Let's think it's 72. How's that?
I'm going to have to get off my seat because the professional that I am forgot to bring the book with me to the. So I'm going to walk up and say it was page 72.
72.
I'll get up
all right. We'll wait for George.
So you've chosen one of the bleeding disorders or what's called factor 9 deficiency or hemophilia B, Jody. So it's the second most common inherited coagulopathy blood clotting disorder of dogs, this one that you chose it on page 72. It was page 72 you chose, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, yes.
Good, because I thought by the depending on the level of activity of factor 9, a dog that's affected may show signs that are mild to severe. Like most bleeding disorders, they can vary from penetrance Current testing identifies the activity of factor 9 in the blood in levels between 5 to 10%, usually being able to tolerate a tolerator with minimal signs, while levels below 3% are associated with spontaneous hemorrhaging. So not too good there. And anything under 1% is pretty much neonatal death. So just sorry, the dog's barking. So screening can be done through your PT or APTT testing or coagulation at any local laboratory, so pathology laboratory. There are some genetic tests.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's what we came to hear. There are genetic tests for it.
Yeah.
But the genetic test is for factor 8. There's so many different factors that the factor 9 hemophilia B is currently not one you can genetically test for.
Yeah.
So one of the bleeding disorders you've chosen, seen in quite a number of breeds, from the bull terrier to the Cairn to the Shetland sheepdog. So
there we go. But not the Belgian Shepherds.
No, not the Belgian Shepherd. In fact, there's very little for the Belgian Shepherds. They're not a ka-ching dog for me.
No, they're not. They're very healthy breeds.
They're very healthy.
Very healthy breed.
And I imagine for anyone who's looking for a Belgian Shepherd pup, they should be, you know, looking for at the adult dogs. Probably, I'm imagining hips, elbows, full breed profile,
eyes, full breed profile. Profiles. Yeah, absolutely.
Colors.
Yeah, I do blood testing as well. I make sure my bitches are healthy, so I do full blood panels and all that stuff before I breed with them. So, yeah. Amazing. I mean, there's other tests. You know, we can do heart. We can do all those. Not many breeders in Australia do hearts because we don't really have any heart issues, but. You can, you know, I mean, same as any breed, you can do 69 million tests, but it's whether or not that is actually a problem in your breed, whether or not you should do that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
All right. Lovely.
Brilliant. Well, Jody, thank you so much for joining us. It was fantastic. It was our first breed spotlight and I loved it. It was so great to just focus on going really into one breed specifically. It was fantastic.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And Jode, when we're over the 15K visit rule, please pop down. Visit me in the office.
Absolutely.
Oh, brilliant. Well, thanks again, everyone. And thanks to all of our listeners. Special shout out, of course, to our producer, Mark Holloway, for editing all of our episodes, to Dion Sofranidis for our awesome guitar riff and music intro. And if you love the podcast, please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify Podcasts, and look forward to seeing you all next week.